Welcome to the Math Ed Podcast. My name is Sam Otten from the University of Missouri, and today I am joined by Hanan Elyami, who's a PhD student at Purdue University. Hanan, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So Hanan is a PhD student, and we're going to talk about what that experience is like being in doctoral studies and then also starting to publish some things. And we're going to get to an article that just came out in School Science and Mathematics. And this is actually a solo authored piece by Hanan called Textbook Representations of Radian Angle Measure, The Need to Build on the Quantitative View of Angle. So Hanan, you're obviously interested in angles, and but I first want to start with the fact that you are a PhD student right now. And so first tell us a little bit about what it's like at Purdue and who you're working with.
So I'm a third-year PhD student in math education at Purdue, and my major professor is Sina Kasberg, who's many of her research revolves around multiplicative reasoning, and she works with pre-service teachers. The main thing that my major professor has helped me with is to trust the writing process and to kind of connect to my identity as an academic writer. I think so far that has been my experience, is to be comfortable with the process of writing.
When I was in grad school at Michigan State, I had a course with Joan Farini Mundy, who is now at NSF. Well, she was at NSF, and then now I think she's president of the University of Maine or something like that. But she was at Michigan State, and she was talking to doc students about how we're in math education, we're thinking about math teaching, we're thinking about mathematical ideas. But she said we really have to view our role and what we're doing in grad school and becoming scholars. We actually have to think about that as our job is to be a writer. And then our genre of writing is mathematics education scholarship. But really, you know, forming ideas, organizing them, putting them into text, sharing them with other people, that's actually the nuts and bolts of the job of being an academic in math education.
Yeah, right. And one of the other things is I like to think of anything that I do as a creative outlet. So thinking about the research process is kind of like this create and fix. You have to, you know, get the IRB, do the interviews or the intervention and collect data. And a lot of it doesn't allow for creativity. So I view the writing about that part as the creative way of expressing what happened, you know, throughout the process. And being able to write and getting comfortable with the process of expressing and writing those ideas is what I appreciate so far with it being a grad student.
Yeah, and with grad students, I think one of the things that was really to my advantage was I was not shy about submitting articles to journals.
Yes.
Where I notice some of my peers at that time, or since I've been a faculty member seeing other grad students, that they feel like there's some official date in the future when they're allowed to submit.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to tell them, like, no, you already have ideas. You have great insights based on your background and things that you're thinking about and looking at, that's already worth sharing. And so sort of taking that step of going ahead and submitting it, getting feedback, and then you can have these kind of happy things that happen where it's like, oh, you know, I'm a doctoral student, but I already have this article published or that article published, or I'm part of a team that got something published. I think sort of allowing yourself to take that step of sending it out there, because it actually might be something that others want to read, that wants, you know, should be in the literature.
Well, yes. Specifically about this paper that is currently published, when I first started it, I didn't feel like it was worthy. And I kept on trying to let it go, go back to the boneyard piece of my work. But I really appreciate my professor, Dr. Kasberg, really kept on encouraging me and making me feel confident about the fact that this is really important work. And getting more comfortable with the writing meant that I also got comfortable with the feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I want to clearly express my ideas, then the reader needs to understand what I'm saying. So if they're giving me feedback, even if it's a critique, that means this is another thing that I need to rephrase, which meant submitting, really, because unless you submit, you're not going to get that, you know, a review or feedback or critique that will help you make your work stronger. So when I submitted this article to School Science and Mathematics, I nowhere near thought it was 100% ready. I don't still don't think that it is 100%. There's always room for improvement. But sending something means that you would get the opportunity to have it be looked at and provide feedback to improve it. I guess that's the important part of doing research is to be comfortable in sending something that you think is 70, 80% done from your perspective, because we're our worst critics and we have higher expectations of ourselves that we want to send something that is very, very, very well done and something that we believe is the best work that we have ever done. And someone else seeing it and thinking that it is good enough is really what needs to be to happen, I guess.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think if there's a core idea that's really important or something that's worth thinking about, that's key. And then if you have some of the major elements are pretty well intact, then that's enough. Then a lot of the other stuff is just kind of cleaning up, things around it. And reviewers can and editors can help you clean up some of the presentation of it or whatever, as long as the idea in there is good and there's kind of a solid method to go with it. Then I totally agree. Like, go ahead and send it out, even if it doesn't feel perfect. Send it out because the other people are going to be the ones that help you get it to that point. And I'll also just add too, part of the bravery is to be willing to be rejected or to be willing to take that feedback. Because yeah, there's lots of rejections that go, and that just has to be part of the process. It doesn't always work out perfectly every time, but again, I would say, going for it, learning from it, trying to make it better. It can end up in good places. Like, for example, the school science and math paper. So this is in volume 120. And again, this is on textbook representations of radian angle measure. So I want to dig into this article from School Science and Mathematics. And I want to start by really just thinking about angle measure itself as a concept. So what is it that we need to kind of know going into this article about angle measure or about how students approach angle measure?
Yeah, so one thing, as you mentioned in the paper, is that I wanted to work with something that is related to conceptualizations of measurement and specifically measurements in trigonometry. So I wanted to start with a narrow focus or like a grain size focus, and I wanted to explore angle as a concept itself. So I started looking for literature that talks about, how learners conceptualize angles. And one of the major papers that influenced this work was by Jane Kaiser. And in that paper, she compared fourth graders' conceptions of angle to the way scholars have conceptualized angle throughout the development of the concept of angle. So she referred to three aspects of angle, not just the two that I mentioned. She talked about angle as a quality, angle as a quantity, and then angle as a relation. And that is what I explored further, the different aspects, or as I call them in the paper, different views of angle. So there were many references, but basically, viewing angle as a quality means that learners are paying attention to the geometric figure, or like the rays. Things that are qualitative about the angle, thinking of angle as a wedge or part of a geometric figure. Viewing angle as a quantity means that the learner is attending to something that is measurable about the angle. So, viewing the angle as an amount of openness or an amount of rotation, something that is measurable. Now, the relation aspect that I mentioned earlier. The more I looked at it in the literature, it was kind of a mixture of both. And that is why I wanted to focus on the two views of angle, the qualitative and quantitative, because they were clear to identify, I guess.
And do we know anything about any kind of like somewhat of a progression? Like, do young children sort of really see the qualitative? They see it as like an object itself that is an angle. And does the quantitative part have to be developed? Or is there also some sort of natural intuition that young children have or children have about the quantitative side as well?
Well, with the study that Kaiser did, they were attuned to both. And so some of the children were viewing the angle as, sharp. Viewing an angle as as a sharp object, which is a quality of an angle, they were mixing up the idea of sharp So if an angle is less sharp, then it is less of an angle and could interpret that as having less of a measure,
Oh, I see.
which is the reverse of what you want. So that's
Right.
if someone is viewing angle as a quality. Now, if someone is viewing angle as a quantity, that doesn't mean that there aren't, potential problems. For example, if you're attending to the length of the rays, then that might, lead to some potential problems. The hardest thing about measuring angles is that the convention for measuring angles is looking at the subtending arc and relating it to something, within the angle. So just think about that. You're looking at an angle, but you're measuring it with circles. So that is really hard for some students to conceptualize. And that is where having a quantitative view also still needs to be supported, but it is a good first step if you want to be able to productively measure angles.
So let's shift into your study where you're looking at some textbooks. So, what would you say was the overall aim or purpose of your study? And then, what scope did you have for yourself? Or what kind of boundary did you put around that study?
So initially, I wanted to explore learners' conceptions of radian angle measure, and that's what I looked through into the literature for. And then I thought, okay, maybe I can do something where I interview some learners and categorize their conceptions as qualitative or quantitative, something similar to what Dr. Kaiser did. But I thought to kind of take a step back first, and I needed to further explore the concept myself. And that is why I decided to look at that concept and explore the concept from a curricular perspective. So that is the boundary that I placed for myself.
And then how did you go about selecting the textbooks that you included in the study?
So I looked for reports, like market reports of the majority used textbooks in the States. And that's how I decided on the textbooks publishers that I'm going to look at. And then because I was specifically looking at radian angle measure, I looked for the textbooks from those publishers that covered that concept. And that is how I ended up with 8 textbooks. And so I wasn't comparing the textbooks to each other. My idea is to holistically look at all of the textbooks that discuss the topic of radian angle measure and attempted to conduct the analysis on those, irrespective of where they came from.
Okay, so getting a sense of like what are students going to see in the United States like if, with regard to radian angle, rather than trying to like separate one textbook out from another textbook or that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's correct. So because radian is a concept that is covered in high school, the textbooks that I looked at were high school textbooks. So basically Algebra 2 and Pre-Calc from 4 different publishers.
I'm speaking with Hanan El-Yami from Purdue University about her article in School Science and Mathematics. And so let's go ahead and take a look at what you found. So you kind of broke things down into the figures that were shared in the textbooks about radian angles. And then you also looked at the definitions and how those were developed about radians. So let's start with the figures. Like, what did you see when you actually looked at the diagrams and displays that were given?
Yeah, so out of the 8 textbooks that I looked at, I found totally 20 diagrams, or figures, as I call them in the paper. And each textbook had one definition. So 20 diagrams and 8 definitions from all of the textbooks. And in the paper, I wanted to categorize those diagrams holistically. What I found is that 2 of the 20 diagrams were categorized as quantitative, only 2. The remaining diagrams emphasized qualitative aspects of angle. For example, using the arc, which is a measurable attribute of the angle, but in those diagrams, the arc was used as a label, or as Pat Thompson calls it, a pointer that, points you to pay attention to the angle itself rather than explaining or showcasing that arc as a measurable attribute of the angle.
So just to make sure I'm understanding it, so like if there was an arc that then continued around like in a circle, and if it kind of labeled, you know, this is like 30% of the way around, and then here's the other 70% of the way around. If it was labeled in that way, would that be what you would consider like a quantitative kind of figure?
Yes.
Okay. But if it's just an arrow, a naked arrow there that's just kind of pointing, here's the angle, then that's not yet quantitative.
That is correct. And in the paper, I do have a definition of what counted as a qualitative representation versus what counted as a quantitative representation. So I do have an explanation of how those were categorized.
Yeah, and just to me, the interesting thing to think about is, you know, visual is so strong. Like, you know, students really spend a lot of time and energy processing like what they're seeing. So even though the text of the curriculum materials might have some development and some problems that involve measuring and, you know, looking at the portions of the whole circle that, you know, of rotation or whatever. So there might be quantitative things embedded in the written problems and stuff, but what you found was that they don't really come through in the visual things that are slapped on the page.
Yes, so not in the visuals, and even the definitions, the eight definitions were predominantly defining one radian angle measure rather than expressing or exploring the quantitative approach or process that goes into measuring angles in radian.
Yeah, and to me, that's a really interesting thing to think about because it's one thing to just define what one radian means. This is what one radian is. Let me show you, tell you what it is. But it's another thing to realize the reason we care about one radian is because it's a way to measure any of the angles. Angles that are smaller than one radian, larger. And sort of another way to do it would be just to say, here's a definition of a measurement process. And then
Exactly.
sort of define it as a way of quantifying this thing that is an angle.
Yes, that is correct.
Did you find any of the definitions that take that kind of quantitative approach, or were they all kind of, you know, unanimous in really thinking about one radian?
Well, the interesting thing is defining one radian happened either explicitly by saying, you know, one radian is this, or implicitly by talking about the unit circle and then saying, you know, the arc length equals one, which equates the arc length to the radius in the definition. So explaining the relation, the quantitative process, was hardly present, I guess. Only four of the definitions were, you know, talking about the relationship that constitutes radian angle measure.
So you have this careful look at how radians show up in these textbooks, but as you know, teachers are this important, you know, factor that implement from textbooks, and they can bring life into it. They can also make improvements over how things are, you know, presented in the textbook. So I wonder what advice you might have, or if you think about if you were teaching from these textbooks, how would you proceed with angles and especially radian angles? Building on, or how would you respond to what you saw in the textbooks?
Yeah, so that's one of the things that I mention in the paper, that I am not claiming that the textbooks are the determining factor on how the students will conceptualize it. So in my recommendation, I kind of spoke to the teachers to capitalize on the quantitative aspect of the angle. So my approach, or what I would recommend to the teachers, is to attempt to conceptualize radian from multiple diagrams rather than from the definition or from one diagram, and to capitalize on the quantitative aspects of angles. So trying to move students' thinking into looking at measurable attributes of the angle and discussing what quantitative process can we use to quantify the angle. Especially since giving learners a definition does not ensure that they're going to acquire the concept. If anything, the definition could only learn through a memorization, not a conceptualization, and is sometimes forgotten, as Tal and Vinner would say.
Yeah, and the really powerful thing about visuals is you can talk about them and look at them in different ways. So, you know, if you do have a figure in a textbook and the figure is kind of leaning more towards the qualitative side of what you're looking at, it still can be useful by bringing another kind of conversation about it and what's a different way we can look at this figure. And so there's still, even in the qualitative figures, there's still fodder there that a teacher can, you know, really make progress with or do something productive with.
Yeah, correct. So even with qualitative representations or figures or diagrams, attempting to try and make sense of what that representation looks like, or what is the quantitative elements that we can think of when looking at a diagram that is qualitative, can be productive if you're paying attention to the quantitative aspects or measurable attributes of the angle when looking at a qualitative diagram. So, for example, thinking of pi over 3 as the angle measure that is equivalent to 60 degrees. That is a qualitative view because you're only thinking about the angle measure in relation to another angle measure. For some students, when you try to talk about these things, they might think of, oh, well, pi over 3 is approximately 1. So that is going to be close to 1 radian, and that is going to get them to start thinking quantitatively about the angle, even though they were looking at a diagram that is qualitative. The capitalization on the quantitative aspects of the angle can be a productive approach.
Hanan El-Yami is a PhD student at Purdue University, and so I know you're still, you know, moving forward towards your career in mathematics education. You've gotten it started, but you're still kind of on the earlier end of it. So I'm going to just say, what if there was an alternative pathway for yourself? What if you were not going to continue forward with your PhD and going into mathematics education, academia? Is there something else you could imagine doing instead?
This is a very hard question, because really what I'm doing right now, I feel passionate about, and I don't see myself doing anything else. But if I were... it has to be something that I can incorporate, you know, my love of creativity with. So some people, when I asked people about possibilities, what they can see me, because I can't see myself in any other thing, they were talking about, yeah, you have to be someone, you have to keep being creative. So maybe like a content creator, keep doing things on YouTube, some people mentioned, you know, public relation, but really if I want to do something that I'm as passionate about, it would really be counseling, because really I do care about mental health, and that is another aspect of me. And I acknowledge that sometimes life can be stressful. Grad school can sometimes be stressful too. So I try to provide that counseling to my colleagues and sometimes to myself too. So that is probably going to be my alternative if it wasn't in math education.
Yeah. Well, Hanan, it's been really wonderful speaking with you about your study, and I wish you all the best of luck in your program.
Thank you for having me.